And welcome into the Bruins Beat, presented by Prize Picks. I am Evan Marinofsky. That is Connor Ryan, who is fresh off staring directly into the eclipse. Connor, what is up?
Evan, I can't really see you very well right now, but other than that, I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing?
Doing great. Doing great. Two of my roommates had the eclipse glasses, so I'd kind of go into their where they're doing their work, and I'd be like, sunglasses, please.
Yes.
Eclipse glasses, please.
I've kind of got my own like little eclipse here with this light. It's like I can kind of do an impression.
I want to see. So. I can't look. I can't look. If I look like this though, I kept looking up at the eclipse and being like, what if I go like this, like.
It won't go well for you, Evan, unfortunately.
I kind of be like,
Yeah, you know, a quick little glance. Yeah.
A little glance. Now you miss me. Good day on Twitter, though. I mean, some of the tweets are dumb, but it's good for the content. It's good for the memes, which is...
It's always a good content day. Shout out to the sun for always supplying us with light and life, and most importantly... content for Twitter
memes. Yeah, what's funny is when that happened, was it 2017?
Yes.
None of you knew who I was. I don't think you know who I am now, but I was not alive in 2017, so I didn't get to experience this is my first eclipse. So you know, there are definitely listeners who think like, wow, Evan was born in 2017. Like we mentioned it so much that I think it actually is true at this point.
I mean
it kind of might just be true. Anyways, I am back. I am back from South Carolina. I got a nice restful break. Thanks to Belle Frazier for stepping in and hosting better than me. It's not hard to do that, but she did.
We had a terrier takeover, Evan. We had Belle. Was awesome. I did one show with Bruins Beat, and then for Poke the Bear, we had the esteemed Scott McLaughlin, another great terrier product on. So the UMass guy goes away for a week in South Carolina. All of a sudden, his podcast is just littered with BU people.
The UMass goes away, and the BU kids will play, yes. Which is basically what happened. But Charleston, really nice place. Highly recommend it. Have you been there?
I have. I went in 2021 in middle of July. A little toasty.
A little hot,
little humid, but fantastic food. Great city, not too big, which is always great. Cool. Like you can kind of see it in a couple of days, but you don't feel like you're running around having to do all that much. Great city.
Chill. That was what it was. Yes. It was chill. So now we're ready for the playoffs. We're geared up. We're ready to go. So are the Bruins. Bruins are playing really well of late. 1-4 of 5. I was watching on the plane home that Panther game. I had they're like, hey, can you please put your phone, your laptop away? And all that. I'm like, no, they're in overtime. All right. We can take off in a bit. Just let me watch this. But they're hot. 4 of 5. They're rounding into form ever since that bag skate at practice. They've sort of kind of figured it out. They have, Carolina this week. They got Pittsburgh later in the week. But there's a negative to all this great play, Connor, and that is that because the playoff format is the way it is, there's a pretty damn good chance the Bruins are going to face off against the Tampa Bay Lightning in round one, which, again, not ideal. A few weeks ago, we were discussing more, who would you rather play, Toronto or like the second wild card team? Well, it turns out you might get the first wild card team, which would not be the best matchup. And again, I know that no one really likes this playoff format. I know they did it mainly to kind of get good matchups in the first round. I've never liked this playoff format, and it's not just because of this. I think you and I have a pretty well-documented history of not liking this because it just doesn't make sense. You know, if you're the number one seed, if you're the number three seed, you should play the number eight seed or the number six seed. You shouldn't be playing, a team that's right there with you in the first round, at least. But I'm not going to complain. But this, if they do match up against Tampa and it's looking more and more like that's likely to happen, just not the most ideal first round matchup for the Bruins.
Yeah, no, it's definitely tough in terms of what the matchup will be. There's no easy way to kind of ease into the playoffs with, maybe team like Detroit or whoever ends up winning that second wildcard spot, which seems like everyone is opposed to actually going on and taking that spot. But no, I mean, Tampa is going to be a very tough draw, right? Like, you know, the star talent on that team, they're not maybe as deep as they were in years past, but when you've got guys like Kucherov and Point, Stamkos and Hedman, you're still a pretty damn good team. You know how to win. They've won two cups with a lot of that same group in place. And Vasilevsky. I know he's had back surgery, hasn't really had the strongest year, but I don't think you really discount a guy with that resume in the playoffs as well. So it'll be tough. Again, I'm not signaling doom or gloom, right? I think Bruins fans learned full well last year of sometimes you run into the team in the second wildcard spots, a team that just gets hot at the right time, and they end up being a buzzsaw. As much as like I look at like, what was it, 2014 is when they played like the Red Wings, who were like the carcass of what they were for the previous decade before then. That was like a
perfect that was when moment. they kept trying to extend the streak.
Yes, exactly. And that team was like, what was it? That I think that had to have been five games, right? Like, I don't think it was going to be one of those situations.
I think the Red Wings won game one, and then the Bruins won four straight, if memory serves.
Yeah. So like, there wasn't going to be one of those kind of matchups, I think. Like maybe Detroit or one of those teams. But even like if the Islanders make it in, that team's a tough out. Pittsburgh's playing well by some formula. I don't know why, how or why.
Crazy.
Pittsburgh is doing well. But again, it's like, damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? Like, it is definitely a tough matchup. Like, it's not as easy to carve out a path. It's not as easy to carve out a path going forward when you got Tampa that very well could beat you in the first round. Just the way they're built, they've played you pretty well this year. But if you're the Bruins and you're trying to get on a roll here, maybe it's better to start off with a test and see what you got, right? Like, if sooner or later, there's not going to be a way to, like, even in 2019, you look at that Bruins team, and a lot fell their way, right? Like, you have Tampa Bay was a juggernaut. They get knocked out, so they're out of the mix. You don't have to deal with Pittsburgh or Washington. Teams have been really good for a while. So play Carolina, play Columbus, who was a sneaky, really good team for being kind of the last seeded team in there. But Toronto was still a very tough out early on. That team had flaws, but they push you to the brink as well. So, again, yeah, it's not the best case scenario, but if you're the Bruins and you're trying to prove your worth, try to go on a run here, maybe get the test early on. And it's kind of what's been the case the last, what, week, 2 weeks with who they're playing. Like, maybe just keep that momentum rolling, because right now they're playing at a high level. Unfortunately, Tampa is as well.
Well, that's the thing. Tampa's been hot since March 1st. Vasilevsky's been otherworldly, and like, they're just, the stars are aligning for them. I will say, though, I mean, you bring up a good point in that, you know, if the Bruins, I think no one really knows what to expect with this Bruins team come the playoffs. If they beat Tampa in round one, wouldn't you feel pretty good about that? Like, wouldn't you be kind of going, all right, beat Tampa in round one? Then you've got, you know, Florida or Toronto potentially in the second round, and that's maybe a little bit more favorable matchup. I know Florida's a really hard playoff team, but so is Tampa. And then it's sort of after that, you know, who knows? So it would be a test. I mean, that's a series I haven't, you know, it hasn't happened yet, so I'm not putting out a prediction. That's what you said. I'm not going to go like, Bruins in seven. I can tell you that series is going long. That would be a legitimate first round series, and my guess is that all the national people would pick the Lightning as sort of the easy upset pick. But I think it's unfortunate that when the Bruins get really hot, they're going to draw a tougher playoff opponent in the first round than they would have before. But you mentioned another interesting point, in that the last couple weeks for them in terms of teams, and even coming up here, you have Carolina on Tuesday, Pittsburgh was really hot on Saturday. It's sort of been like a playoff simulation for them. And we said this about the wild card teams a lot, about how they're very fortunate when it comes to the playoffs, because they're playing playoff hockey for about a month leading up to, you know, mid-April when the playoffs begin. And it feels like the Bruins have been doing that for the past couple of weeks. You look at having to play teams like Washington and Florida and Carolina and even Nashville, who's just kind of tearing through the West, crazily enough. And you also look at, you know, I mentioned that bag skate a couple weeks ago, and Montgomery called them out saying they were not ready for playoff hockey and all that. I feel like the last couple weeks have been the playoffs for them, just at the end of the regular season, which I think could really serve them well come round one.
Yeah, I mean, it's so different from where we were a year ago, right? Where it's like that team was such a wagon that it felt like for the last 6-7 weeks, we're just waiting to get to the finish line, right?
What did we even talk about in those last few weeks?
I think we were talking like, all right, Evan, like, I'll see you at, like, the parade route. Like, I think it was just literally, like, because I didn't have, like, that many lineup decisions to talk about. I think we all assumed that both goalies were going to get the net. There wasn't as much roster turnover, really. So it's more or less just like, every week, this team looks pretty good. I think that's all we talked about. And it was more or less like, you know, keeping guys fresh, getting guys, you know, healthy, making sure that was the priority. And it's not to say that's not the case this year, but you're right where, it, like, this team has clinched a playoff spot already. They're not desperate like a team like Florida last year or all these teams right now that are trying to scrap to get in, like Washington or Pittsburgh or the Islanders, what have you. But when you've got this slate of games the Bruins have had, and they've really have been treading water since the All-Star break, to go up against teams like Florida twice, you're going to have Carolina twice, Nashville, who's been one of the hottest teams in the league, like Washington. And it's kind of what Jeremy Swayman mentioned before, is like how important experience is at this time of year and just knowing what to expect, right? Like, and you look at the way the Bruins have built their game since then, like, they pass a test down in Florida. They come back from three different deficits to win that game on the road. You go to Washington. Again, you don't have to worry about 3-on-3 overtime or anything like that in the playoffs, but 4 minutes of a penalty kill in an overtime, you pass that test, you got out a win there. And then you look at like Nashville and Carolina. What's been one of the Bruins' biggest issues this year has been, you know, closing out these games in the third period. Both those games take care of business. They suppress shots. They get empty net goals, snuff those things out. And then you got this game against Florida from the weekend where physical game, the Bruins are up to the task and come away with an overtime win. Like, again, doesn't mean it's going to translate right to the playoffs, but this team, you know, with just a few weeks to go, is building its game and kind of just knows what to expect more. We've made the analogy so many times, like, that team was so good. You go to the playoffs, Florida punched him in the face and they had no response for it. This team, like, again, every team, even one that goes on a deep run, is going to face adversity. They're going to get punched in the mouth a couple of times. But if you're equipped to get back up, then you're more equipped to kind of go further on. It just feels like this team is more seasoned with these, you know, several tests they faced over the last month.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. And even look at, you know, Crossing Sports here. And we talk so much about these teams that are wagons 1 year, don't go very far. And then the next year they end up going far. Look at like Purdue right now. I think the national championship is Monday night, so we haven't seen it yet. But Purdue is in the national championship after getting, you know, embarrassed last year. And you look at Tampa in 2019, and there's so many examples of this. And it's like, what if that's the Bruins this year, you know? And I think we can kind of flush that out a little bit when the playoffs do come around. But first, quick word from our friends over at Prize Picks. Quick break in the action to tell you about my good friends over at Prize Picks. Prize Picks has something for every sports fan, from basketball and hockey to League of Legends and everything in between. You can pick LeBron, Caitlin Clark, Connor McDavid, and Jude Bellingham all in the same entry. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, and Georgia. Prize Picks even offers injury insurance so that your entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. For basketball games, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and does not return in the second, Prize Picks will have your back and not count that as a loss. Personally, the NHL regular season, it's winding down, and when the postseason begins, I'm taking more on David Pastrnak point totals. How could you not? I'm expecting a pretty big postseason from one David Pastrnak. And with the Red Sox, how can you not do the same on Rafael Devers' home runs? Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the Prize Picks app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Now, back to the show. So, goaltending. This was Jim Montgomery talked about this prior to Saturday's game against Florida, mentioning that they haven't committed to the rotation yet for the playoffs, but if they did, it would be sort of a game one, game two, game three, you know, on and off, on and off, on and off. And this is probably the most talked about thing we've talked about this year, but it makes sense because that's a pretty big decision. The more I think about it and the more I look at how Swayman and Ullmark have performed this year, I know for a fact I don't want them to ride one as they have in the past two seasons because it just hasn't worked. I want to see what Swayman gives you in the playoffs, but I don't need to see him play all seven games in the series or play, you know, something like 18 straight games or anything like that. Because as we saw with Linus Ullmark, and I know it's hard to compare two goalies, but you know, you can't go from doing every other game all season to now, okay, you're going to take every single game. I'm intrigued with rotation and whether they choose to do, you know, Ullmark plays great in game one and two, but then put Swayman in for game three and four. But it sounds like it's going to be more on and off, on and off. I'd be intrigued by that because it has worked to this point. I'm not saying that I, you know, definitely want it, but it that's what's gotten them to this point. And it goes back to like what we said last year, which was you have this rotation that's every other game. Why just go away from that completely in the playoffs? Now, I mean, if Ullmark gets a shutout in game one or Swayman gets a shutout in game two, you know, it's hard to go away from that guy after a shutout. I think that's, and Montgomery even alluded to that. But I think it's an interesting thing. And if any team is to try this, it's them.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think Montgomery kind of more or less mapped it out, right? Where I'm kind of more on the line of like making that concession as to like have it be more of a feel-based approach of like Ullmark gets game one. If he wins, and barring it's like he wins, but he gives up five goals, it's like,
yeah, it's like 6-5. You know,
yeah, something like that. Then he gets the net again until he loses. Which again, maybe it's a deviation from what it's been, but it's still enough that you're leaving the option open. If he loses a game, he loses the net, which I feel like you then switch things up, you put in Swayman. And it also fuels that kind of fire within Ullmark as well. Like, again, we've talked about this before, but yeah, these guys, they got the hugs. They love each other, obviously. They're also very competitive professional athletes. Like, yes. If you're going to lose that net, you're going to be pissed and you want to get back in there. And that's something they both alluded to as to why their partnership, you know, works well. They support each other, but they're competitive athletes as well. But Montgomery does make a point, though, that that's kind of been their strategy all year is back and forth. They've had they've rotated for pretty much 20 games now, so they haven't really deviated from it. We'll see if they stick to it on Tuesday against Carolina, which means that it'd be Swayman with both games against Carolina down the stretch, not maybe augmenting the schedule a little bit to give Ullmark a start there as well. So that might be able to like paint a better picture as to how they're approaching these things. But yeah, I'm more on like the line of like, again, I don't think it'd be going six straight starts unless Ullmark wins. If you play Tampa and he sweeps and he has like a Rask Pittsburgh series like from 2013, yeah, you stick with him. He's on a roll. But as soon as they're a loss, I feel like you then have to change things up. But it is going to take a lot of conviction from Montgomery. Like, he makes a valid argument as to they've done that back and forth for the whole year, really, and it's worked out. But again, you get to the playoffs, and even if it's not a 36-save shutout, what if it's, you know, 28 or 29 saves in game one against a very good Tampa team? Has a clutch save on Braden Point. There comes the second-guessing, right? Like, that's where the challenge is going to come from Montgomery and his staff this entire playoff run for however long it goes.
That's why I think there's a middle ground to this, and that middle ground is what you mentioned, which is where, you know, Ullmark for games one and two, really good in game one, pretty solid in game two. And you go, okay, you know what? We're going to switch back to Swayman, see what he can give us when the series shifts back to Tampa, and kind of have it more of a feel-based approach, which again is also very, very, very debatable and easy to second guess. But it hits more of like, you know, I mean, you look at last year with Ullmark, like Ullmark didn't start to stink until what? Game five. It was the end of game five. Even before game five, you know, Bruins up 3-1, we were all saying, you know, now might be a good time to go back to Swayman, give Ullmark the night off. You know, you have the series in hand. See what Swayman gives you. Give Ullmark a rest. If Swayman stinks, you can go back to Ullmark and he's rested. So I think that's another element to it where, like, you know, I think people misremember the series where they're like, oh, Ullmark just was terrible after one game. And it's like, no, he was fine. For like three or four games, he was good. it was after that that things started to fall apart. Now, you also had Florida found themselves and all this, and there were lots of other, it wasn't just Linus Olmark, but they can play one or two or three games in a row. They are capable of that. I know that they haven't done that this year, really, but they can do that. It's not so much that, it's the longevity of a run and the mental and physical toll it takes. I know we're making it sound like they're children, or, you know, oh, can they handle this? Like, we're handling them with kid gloves, but it's the workload they're accustomed to. It's like starting pitchers now in baseball. If you were to say, all right, we need a Brian Bayo to go all nine innings tonight. It's like, well, that's not how things go in the regular season. He's not used to that. So, you know, I think it's more so what you're saying. And I think this is definitely where I fall, where it's like, you know, doesn't need to be every other game unless that just keeps working. Then it's like, all right, well, screw that. Let's do it. But it's more so that middle ground of, all right, Swayman starts game one, you know, game one, he's great. Game two, he's great. Game three, yeah, he's okay. Let's put Olmark in, and you kind of go from there. Which is also something that can work. If they just have factor meals before each game, Connor, then it's a game.
Right.
Whoever eats factor meals before their game, before the series starts, they should get all seven. So a quick word from our friends over at Factor. So we did the goalies. We've done the potential playoff matchup. Both of those things, I don't think that'll be the last time we discuss on either this or poke the bear. I think there's a lot more we can flush out with that. One interesting little tidbit I've really liked of late has been this Wotherspoon Peak pairing. On Saturday, they go against Florida. They go up against Tkachuk and Bennett. They hold their own. Wotherspoon draws some penalties. Neither guy is afraid to rough, you know, the other team up. They play tough. Meat and potatoes kind of defensemen. You know, they're physical. I like that. I like that, Connor. I the physicality element has really come out more in me recently of liking that. Like, yeah, that's what they need, because they do need it. They do need it. And I like this third pairing. I do. When the playoffs come around, now again, Wotherspoon has been, you know, we kind of said all season would be a great seventh defenseman. And again, he's not your only option. You have guys like Lowry and Shattenkirk. You're more of your puck movers that can come in a series. But I think it's really encouraging that this pairing in this stretch has been pretty good. And to go up against guys like Tkachuk and Bennett says a lot about them.
Yeah, no, you're right. Like, sometimes you just need those guys who are either the big bodies or just play a brand of hockey that makes sense for the playoffs, right? Like, you saw that in that game against Florida. Both those guys were getting involved after the whistle. Whenever Tkachuk tried to pull something, they were right there as well, getting involved. And again, like, you look at some of these teams, we've mentioned all the time about these teams that go on these deep runs and, you know, how big their defense is and how physical they are. Doesn't mean you have, like, the teams are littered with, like, four Victor Hedmans or, you know, four Petrangelos. There's some guys that, like, are the third pairing you look at, you're like, oh, you know that guy, like, he's not really flashy, but, like, you know, the, you know, who do they have, like, you know, like Zach Bogosian, those kind of players who are like a third pairing guy, unflashy, but in the playoffs they do the little things that help you win. I think that's what
Luke Shen
yeah, exactly, like, those are the kind of players that, again, are, you know, have their moment during a deep run, right? They have a critical block or a critical hit, but even if you don't notice them that much, it's kind of like our old Jakub Zboril comparison of, like, maybe you don't notice those guys, but it's like an offensive lineman. If you don't notice them in a playoff series, maybe they're doing their job. They're forcing guys out of grade A ice. They're blocking shots. They're getting involved after the whistle. They're, you know, you don't have to drop the gloves or land out a big hit to be a physical deterrent. You know, like, Parker Wellspoon's not the biggest guy out there, but he's will answer the bell when needed. Same with Andrew Peak. So, yeah, it's really encouraging to see how they've played as of late. I think Wotherspoon was really involved in that game against Florida. He had a great setup too. I think it was a backdoor pass to Pastrnak that I think he just missed or went off the post. So he brings a little bit of that, you know. And Peak's been tested as well. Like, he played, I think, 2 minutes and 40 seconds of that 4 minute penalty kill in Washington as well. So these are guys that are becoming very dependable guys further down in your lineup. That's what you need. Like, we've talked about Shattenkirk and Lowry, and if this team goes on a run, you're going to need those guys. Like, they're going to step in. Injuries happen, all those sorts of situations. But For right now, if you're looking at just adding that kind of, as you said, meat and potatoes kind of hockey, that simple hockey, I think Peak and Weatherspoon are your guys to start off this playoff run.
They are, and I think that's going to be a big thing, especially, and again, if they can continue to prove they can go up against, you know, other teams' top pairings. I mean, we know McAvoy can do that. We know Carlo can do that. But if you can give those guys a shift off against a Kucherov and a Point and guys like that, and you can throw out Peak and Weatherspoon, you can't necessarily do that with Low Ryan Shattenkirk. And that's, I think that's one of the areas where, like, again, it goes back to if you can free up those minutes for those, for guys like McAvoy and Carlo, so they can go out and kill more penalties or be involved more 5-on-5. I think it's a trade-off you take. And especially the way the Bruins are equipped to win, which is more low scoring, close, grinded out kind of games. While this Weatherspoon and Peak might be as you said, your guys you start the playoffs off with. Again, there's still 4 more regular season games left, so I guess a lot could change in those games. One of those things we will see, though, as of now, so we'll see if it's supposed to line up. Montgomery says, as of Monday, said that things are on track for this. But Pat Maroon should be making his debut in black and gold in Pittsburgh. And it's an interesting thing because he's coming back off of an injury, back surgery, right? He had back surgery. All right, so that's Pittsburgh, and then 2 games after that. So 3 games to get ready for the playoffs. Doesn't seem like a lot. Now, he is a vet. He's an NHL vet. This is a guy who's been around forever, so it's not like he needs a lot to get back up to speed. But, you have lines that are sort of starting to form and things like that. Is there enough time left to get him ready for the playoffs?
I mean, it's definitely a tough task when you look at just the injury, the age, those kind of things. But also, I think, like, with Maroon, it's what you see is what you get. Like, I think the Bruins know what to expect from a guy like that. And it's kind of the same thing as, like, the Weatherspoon Peak. Like, you kind of know what to expect. You know what he can bring. And, again, you'll take the goal or the assist when it's there, depending on where he's used, whether it's the fourth line or even the third line, if they want to maybe – it seems like that whole group's really in flux right now. Like, Brezo's injury kind of threw everything up in the air. You've got Boquist with DeBrusk now and all those things. So where he lands will be interesting, but in terms of what he provides, like, you'll take the occasional point, but the physicality, the being a deterrent, the fact that he can drop the gloves as well – he's just a guy that seems like he's built for the playoffs. So wherever he can slot in, you kind of more or less, as long as he's healthy, you know what to expect from him in terms of what he can provide, at least in kind of the bread and butter of his game, more or less.
And he's just a playoff battle-tested vet, which is something I think that bottom six really needs. I think for anybody else, 3 games to get ready for the playoffs might be a little difficult, but with him, you know what you're going to get. He knows his role. He's not playing above the fourth line. I wonder if there'll ever be a point where he's playing so well where, like, could he be on the third line? Could Pat Maroon, Netfront on the power play? It's interesting. Like, a guy like Van Riemsdyk is another one that I think they got to get going. Like, he's been on the fourth line of late and came back from what looked like a bad illness and just kind of hasn't found it yet. That's something else to watch, I think, over these next 4 games. But lots of stuff happening. It's ramping up, Connor. I want the regular season over, but at least, as we said, there are still questions that storylines you can talk about and things like that. Whereas last year it was like nothing in those last couple weeks. But as I always say, you and I, we continuously podcasted through COVID, dog days, spring, summer, fall, winter. We did all of it. Sometimes I go back and look on YouTube. We were talking about, like, could the Red Sox play their home games could the Bruins play their home games at Fenway Park?
That's how desperate we were. We were just talking about, like, how Ron Renicki was going to be managing that shitty team.
And we would do like 20 to 30 minutes of just, like, flushing it out and talking about, like, this.
It was like filibuster. It was just literally us just talking. We should have just described, like, the plot of, like, that we'll do in the off season. If the Bruins are out early on, we'll do, like, we'll talk about Oppenheimer. We'll just map out the plot.
Yes.
We'll talk about Dune. We'll do all that stuff. So let's hope they go on a deep run.
You know what's funny? Like, there are a lot of times when I'll watch a show or I'll watch a documentary and I'm like, man, I'd love to talk about it or see what other people think. And it's like, okay, we have a platform for it. And it's funny, like, if the Bruins are out early and it's, you know, they're out in round one and, you know, there will be a long off season in that case. Us and Bruins Beat listeners, we should pick up a show or pick up a, you know, a documentary and watch it and review it one episode.
Yes.
People will be pissed, but we should do that if that happens. If that happens.
I swear to God, Evan, if we have to do a Young Sheldon podcast breakdown, it's going to be dark days on this YouTube channel. The comments, let me tell you, they're not going to be thrilled. Beyond the fact that probably out the Bruins are out in the first round, if that's the case, God help us if it's like pilot episode. This Young Sheldon guy, he's kind of quirky, isn't he? That'll be it. That's all. Yeah.
It's like the popcorn. It's like, who is the, oh man, it's the same kind of humor as, who was the woman they caught eating popcorn the other day? Who was that?
Kelsey Plum, right?
Kelsey Plum, yes. And she was, you know, like the, like, and that got ratioed into oblivion.
Of course.
What's funny, Young Sheldon, you know, I've been with my girlfriend almost 2 years now. And the only red flag in our time together is she did pick up Young Sheldon and enjoyed it. And I was just, I remember hearing about it and just like my heart sank. I was like, oh my God, like this person I thought I knew, I don't know, you know? And it was just devastating. And she didn't finish it, thankfully. She didn't finish it. But, you know, I was just, like, I'm like, seriously? Really?
I mean, listen, Evan, I haven't seen the show. So who knows? Maybe Young Sheldon's turned a new leaf and maybe he's funny now. Like, maybe, who knows? Maybe he was funny in his youth and just the weight of life just sucked all the joy out of him, as it does for all of us. Who knows?
Yes. Oh, we're getting that deep right now, are we? Just sucks it all out. Young Sheldon, there are some people, and not just her, a producer for New England Hockey Journal, the TV show, was like, oh, you know what show I've been loving recently? Young Sheldon. And I'm like, really? Really? But people do. I don't know. It's still on, right? It's still going. So how about this? If the Bruins get swept in the first round, we have to watch a season of Young Sheldon. That's the deal.
Deal. Mark it
down. Bruins get swept in round one. We have to watch the first season of Young Sheldon. We'll do a Bruins beat or a Poke the Bear reacting to that first season. And the listeners have to watch it with us. They got to watch it
every
too,
single so. One of them. If not, we're gonna knock on your door.
Exactly, we're coming for you.
Yes,
we're coming for you. Connor, what can the people look forward to from you over at theglobeandboston.com?
Yeah, we're going to have you covered every step of the way this season for however long it goes, whether it's recaps, features, columns, breakdowns, obviously playoff previews incoming as well. So you can find all that stuff over at boston.com and the Globe. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at ConnorRyan_93.
Go do all that. That's Bruins Beat presented by Prize Picks. Evan Marinofsky, Connor Ryan, you Bruins Beat listeners. Have a great rest of your week. Teenage Wayne.